Welcome to the 73 Dream Studios Variety Show.
All right, welcome to Grappling with Ray. It's me, Ray. And today, I am joined...
by me, Sicily.
Are you stealing my gimmick?
It never was your gimmick.
Gimmick infringement, man. Come on. Anyway, so Saturday night, January 22nd. What a night. We, in the UFC world, we saw Francis Ngannou retain his UFC heavyweight title against Ciryl Gane in what is his last contractually obligated fight. Big talk there about him sitting out his contract for a year, not going to continue with UFC possibly unless he gets some big money. We got to see Davison Figueiredo become the new flyweight champion, defeating Brandon Moreno. And now they're talking about maybe having a fourth fight between them, because now the score is tied 1-1 and one draw. So they might have a fourth fight in Brandon Moreno's native country of Mexico. In the wrestling world, down in Newburyport, Massachusetts, we got to see a lot of stuff happen. Not us, but the people down in Newbury. In Newbury, they got to see, for some strange reason, Owen Brody did not show up to the event. He's stripped of a New England title, indefinitely suspended. So now there was a new champion crown, and that was the young upstart Randy Rivera. We also got to see other matches. We got to see the new team of Mortar and Max Smashmaster. I believe their team name is the Slaughterhouse, which I fully believe it, having witnessed Mortar in action myself. And we also got to see Ilya Markopoulos defend his APW Heavyweight Championship against Vern Vicalo, and is set to defend it against Brian Malonis in March, assuming he can survive whatever challenge he faces in February. But what we got to witness ourselves personally, where are we currently, Sicily?
We are currently stationed in Fremont, Maine.
Freeport,
not Fremont. It's still early in the morning, guys.
Yeah, we woke up early for this. Well, I woke up early. But
early for me, too. Anyways.
So we're currently in the Comfort Suites Hotel of Freeport, Maine, because we went down the road last night and witnessed our first ever Limitless Wrestling show.
Yeah.
The show was titled Cut Loose. It was an 8-match card. We're going to run down the matches and we're going to give our thoughts and opinions. I'm going to tell you right now, as far as travel goes, for us, it was like a 3-hour ride, which, I mean, it was fun. We brought the music. I got to listen to my podcasts. And I will say right now, definitely pack snacks. We did not do that. And we ran into a few complications. I don't know why I didn't learn this from Newburyport, but hotels, not Newburyport, from AEW's Boston show. Hotels don't have food. Like, they have breakfast, but they don't have lunch or dinner. So, like, we literally got out of the show 10:30, 10:45, and something we're used to from our town is all these 24-hour shops. Freeport / Yarmouth, because the actual wrestling event was in Yarmouth, they do not have 24-hour shops. Their Domino's Pizza closed at 3:45 p.m.,
yeah, which was way before the show even started.
Yeah, like, we got here at, like, 3:30. We got settled in a room, and then I went to order pizza because I was like, oh, yeah, that's a nice snack to have before the show, and there will still likely be something left after the show for us to eat. And the app was like, error, error, error. And then I had to completely reload the app, and then it was like, oh, no, they're closed. Sorry, pal. You gotta find somewhere else.
Fun times when you're traveling.
Indeed. Now, these are all learning experiences, though, so we're telling you, so hopefully you'll remember, unlike me. I also got a brand new carrying case for the microphone, because that is right, we are not in the studio, aka my bedroom. We are recording straight from this hotel room.
So yeah, this will be one of the first in a while where you won't hear a bunch of random background noise.
Yeah, or like people yelling at the dog, or the cats meowing, like...
yeah.
You might hear some people walk back and forth. I'm not sure what the acoustics of this room is. I turned off the heater. It was so warm in here compared to the, like, -5 degrees back home.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we're going to get into that show now. Do you want to talk about the complication we ran into just getting into the show?
Sure. Well, first of all, there was, like, a lot of people that came, and there wasn't even any parking spots when we got to the venue.
Yes.
And we got there, like, pretty much right as doors were supposed to open, I believe, or maybe a little bit before.
We got there, like, at 6:59. Doors were supposed to open at 7. Doors didn't open until 7:05, but that's forgivable. They're putting a show on.
Like, we didn't get there super early, but we got there like a little bit before doors were supposed to open. Yeah. And when we did get there, there was no parking spots next to the venue.
Which I feel like is a common thing, because there is such a very loyal, dedicated fan base here.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know about this because I didn't know like a ton about Limitless before coming to see the show.
I did more research, yeah.
But yeah, when we got there was like a pretty big line of people, no parking spots. Luckily there was, I think it was a bank or it was just some building that was next to the venue, so I just parked in the opposite parking lot.
And we weren't the only ones, that's why we were like, okay, maybe we won't get towed.
So yeah, we waited in line, that sucked ass because of how cold it was. Just waiting in line for like a good 5 minutes, like I felt numb after like getting into the building.
Imagine the people that got there like hours early to get a good place in line.
I cannot imagine. So yeah, the complication was we get into the building and we have front row tickets or seats.
And keep in mind, when I bought these tickets, the main reason I bought front row was because the website pretty much says that's the only way you can guarantee that you actually get a seat, because buying general admission, you could end up just standing for the whole show.
Yeah. And there definitely was people standing for the show, like quite a few. So yeah, we are expecting front row seats. And when we get in, pretty much everybody's already seated and all the front seats are taken at this point.
And a majority of the rest of the seats too.
Yeah. So we're both just looking at each other like, what are we supposed to do? Like, were we not actually promised front row seats? Were we supposed to get here earlier? Like, we didn't know what was going on because... Again, neither of us have actually come to one of the shows before.
It was very much like, oh man, did we mess up by not being here 2 hours early? Like,
yeah. And luckily, before we even came into the building, there was a woman in front of us who like talked to us because we were talking about like I had asked Ray like if we could just sit in any front row seat, or if like there was going to be a reservation for us or anything. And then the woman in front of us was just like. She said something about general admission.
Yeah, she said general admission, which confused me because I was like, well, we're not general admission. We're front row seats. And turns out she also was front row seat.
Yeah. After we had gotten in and we were confused, we like started to walk around and look at the other seats. And we had walked up to her without really knowing, but she was like standing to the side. And she had also expressed to us her concern about other people being in front row seats when she also had one and she hadn't gotten her front row seat. But apparently she had talked to one of the people who was working there and they were figuring out how to get her a front row seat. And she was kind enough to tell them, like, yeah, these other people don't have their front row seats either. So basically we just had to wait for the people who are working there to bring extra seats for us to sit in the front row.
And then there was like a whole group of five after us that also got front row seats. And we literally watched two different members of staff walk around to all the people sitting in front row, checking their tickets to make sure general admission people didn't just steal a front row seat.
Yeah, and also the woman that we had talked to had told us, like, she seemed pretty pissed off because she was like, yeah, they usually have the front row people, like, come to the front of the line and they get to come in first. So I don't know what happened, but she was pretty angry about it.
Yeah, she seemed like, when she first spoke with us, we thought, like, oh man, why is she so, like, aggressive? Because we thought she was just being, like, kind of aggressive to us. And then after the fact, it was like, oh no, she was just pissed because she also knows that she got screwed out of her front row seat.
Yeah, but I mean, in the end, she and both of us ended up, everyone who got
Oh yeah, the staff was super friendly. Yeah. Like maybe I'm just jaded because I'm used to like not wrestling promotions, but certain other companies, I won't name names, just being like, oh well, even though we messed up, that's not our problem. The staff at Limitless they literally said, I will fix this. Like he was literally like, give me a few minutes and I will fix this. And it was like, okay, I like hearing that. I like hearing that someone's actually gonna take charge and be like, okay, if we have to make front row seats, we're going to make front row seats.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, the seats we ended up getting ended up being pretty awesome because both of us interacted with wrestlers. Like, there was a lot of, action that happened near our seats.
This same woman that we spoke with had warned us, or like, there will be wrestlers that will go into the crowd and they will, like, might fall on you if you don't move out of the way quickly enough.
Yeah, which I had already been expecting because I've seen clips from Limitless, and I mean, in almost any wrestling company, that's bound to happen no matter what, so I was already expecting it to happen.
Yeah, it's not like WWE or AEW where they have a barricade, like, right, yeah. You get a chair, and that's it, like, and with Limitless, something else I noticed about Limitless, they don't have mats outside their ring.
Yep.
It's literally just a hardwood floor.
Yep.
Which we'll get into in a minute, because there was a few spots on that floor.
Oh, yeah.
That, oh my god. So, other than that, what could have easily been disastrous, but again, the staff was absolutely amazing. They were super helpful. I love them. They opened the show with the Limitless Wrestling World title match, where we got to see the prize, Alec Price, defend against Ace Romero. Tell me, how surprised were you to have the world title match opening the show?
I definitely wasn't expecting it. I mean, I didn't really have expectations of what was going to be the opener, but I didn't think that was going to be it. It definitely seemed kind of off to have that as the first match.
Yeah, I thought for sure that was going to be the main event, because I'm just so used to like, oh yeah, world title match, main event.
Yeah. But I was happy to see that it was the first match.
Oh my god, the shots that we got to see happen. Like, these guys brawled all around the arena. This was taking place in an American Veterans Center up in Yarmouth. So, like, it's a bit bigger than, like, the Elks Lodge that APW runs out of. But it's still pretty tight quarters, especially with all the extra seating that had to get added.
Yeah.
At one point, I saw, as Alec was trying to crawl away, he literally had to ask people to move so he could get back to the ring.
Yeah, they definitely traveled, like, pretty far around the ring and into the audience in this match.
One of my favorite moments was, like, in front of us, not directly in front of us, but, like, we see AC kind of put Alec up against the ring apron, and it's like that everyone just shushed themselves immediately, and then you got to hear that impact that Ace gave Alec, and it was, and, like, I cringed so hard seeing it. Alec, like, crawled over to us, and we could see the handprint on his chest.
Yeah, there was a lot of chops in this show, but, like, that was probably one of the, like, loudest ones that happened.
It sounded like he could have had his chest caved in from that shit. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I will say, for those that aren't, that don't listen to this podcast normally, there is going to be some crass language, especially when I'm quoting these wrestlers, because they definitely cuss a lot at this show.
Oh, yeah. No hesitation.
I'm used to, like, Impulse, where they try to keep it family-friendly. APW tries to keep it family-friendly as well. They'll let, like, a shit fly every now and then. This one, again, like, I love it, because Ace Romero literally has, like, a line he says, especially in regards to Alec, where he'll just be like, I'm gonna kill this motherfucker!
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So this match, as we said, it was wild. It was all over the place. Were there any spots in this match that you remember vividly before the finish came?
I'm trying to remember. There were so many matches that it's hard for me to remember specific spots. How about you go?
For me, Ace Romero's finisher is so brutal and seeing it live. Like, I've seen it on TV, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's pretty dope. Seeing it in person, he really spikes his opponent's head into the mat. It's like a package pile driver, sort of. And when I say package, I mean he literally, like, bundles him up.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty brutal.
And he hit him, and he hit it twice, because the first time he hit it, Alec kicked out. But then he, like, low-blowed Alec when the referee was knocked out. And then the referee got up, counted, and it didn't happen. And, like, Allie kicked out. But then Ace got pissed. She, like, knocked out the first ref. The second ref came out. Ace knocked that ref out. Then a third ref came out. And then I think one, either Ace or Alec accidentally bumped into that ref. That ref didn't get knocked out. And then that ref called for the bell. And it was just a no contest at that point.
Yeah.
And they literally had to get security. They had to get staff. They had to get all the, like, any refs that were still standing to, like, separate these two. And that's when one of Maine's favorite performers, the alternative, Anthony Green, came out. And he said, "Hey, guys, this can't happen. This ain't going to be over until you guys get your hands on each other. So you know what? Next month," that being February 26th, I'm going to say that right now. The next Limitless show is February 26th. Tickets, this episode is going to be releasing on a Tuesday. So 3 days from when this episode first airs, tickets are going to be going on sale, 7 p.m., I believe they usually do. Visit their Facebook page, because I will say it's worth the price of admission. But at February 26th, it's going to be Alec Price defending a title against Ace Romero. Anything goes, and Anthony Green is the special guest ref. What do you think of that?
I think it could be a good match.
It's going to be epic, man. And I love the tease at the end where Alec Price is, like, standing face-to-face with AG, and he's just like, "You better not screw me," and then just walks away. And the storytelling beats there. It was great. I know you don't know much about Limitless's history, but Alec and Ace Romero, especially during the pandemic era, which we're still in, but during that, like, lockdown period, they wrestled at least, like, 3 times on Limitless Wrestling the Road. So those matches became iconic. And now this is, like, continuing this heated blood feud between the two of them. I wouldn't be surprised to see some color in their rematch in February. And with Anthony Green added into the mix, I don't know, maybe AG's got some history with AC, so maybe AG turns heel finally and turns on Alec. Maybe he stays true to his face persona and, like, calls it down the middle. Who knows? But that is what I presume to be the main event of February. Could be wrong, because it wasn't the main event of this show. So the next match that we had on the docket, Anthony Green was already out there, so we moved into his match, which was a fatal four-way match featuring some immense talent. In addition to the alternative Anthony Green, we had Kevin Blackwood, former tag team member of the Buffalo Brothers, but now his former tag team partner Daniel Garcia is now signed to All Elite Wrestling. So we got Kevin Blackwood out there. We got the Ghetto Samurai, Nolo Catano, who I was cheering for simply because he was on my ticket. I love the design of their tickets, by the way. Their tickets are lit. They'll have, like, 10 different ticket designs, and they'll have a different wrestler on each of the 10 ticket designs. So Nolo Catano was on mine, so I was like, all right, I'm going to cheer for him, simply because of that. And then we had one of the strangest characters in this match who got such cheap pops. Blanco Loco literally had the crowd cheering him immediately simply because he had Pikachu with him.
Yeah.
He had what looked like a miniature Pikachu backpack.
Yes.
And I was just like, oh my god. And, like, you had Pika power chants happening throughout the match. But, like, don't let the cheap pop fool you. Blanco Loco is immensely talented. He's a luchador straight out of Mexico, New York. You heard me correctly. That's literally what they announced him from. And just the characters in this match, I loved all the high flying and hard hitting action that was there. Was there anything about this match that stood out to you?
There was just a lot of high energy from what I remember. I specifically just, like, remember finding a lot of humor out of Blanco, even though, like, he wasn't involved in the actual, like, match in the ring too often. But, like, I remember a point where he was literally just sitting in the audience and just, like, cheering and doing what the audience usually does.
Yeah.
That was really fucking funny.
That was hilarious.
He just had a lot of moments that were really funny, and I wasn't expecting it, mostly because I don't know who most of the wrestlers for this show were. So anything I saw was pretty unexpected. But, yeah, I thought that was really funny and cool.
You got to see Pikachu. I said it in the very beginning. I'm like, Pikachu's going to take a bump. he's got to take a fucking bump.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And that happened with Kevin Blackwood. Kevin Blackwood literally was threatening it. He's, like, holding Pikachu hostage. And Blanco's like, don't do it, man. Don't do it. And eventually, Kevin Blackwood ended up taking out Blanco Loco. And then he put Pikachu in the center of the ring and did, like, a massive double stomp onto Pikachu. And I could just hear people in the crowd going, that's messed up! That's messed up! That's messed up!
Yeah, it got a pretty big reaction.
Biggest heel heat moment of the match. You took out Pikachu. Yeah. The mascot of most of America's childhood. So, but, of course, as a veteran in this contest, the alternative Anthony Green won the match. I forget who he pinned. Did he pin Nolo? I mean, it's not super important who he pinned, but... No, I will say that they went with the angle of... AG, they're going with the angle that AG is a veteran who kind of knows that his time has passed. Maybe he has a never go, but he's kind of accepting of the fact that, hey, it's the next generation's time because he shook hands with Nolo, he shook hands with Blanco, he tried to shake hands with Kevin, but Blackwood just flipped him off and got out of the ring. But AG literally left the ring and allowed Nolo and Blanco to get a bit of that limelight from the crowd.
Yeah.
So that's cool. That's a cool way because for those that don't know, Anthony Green briefly worked with the WWE, their NXT program, as August Gray. And now that he's back, I mean, he had massive pops. He's the only person to win the Limitless Wrestling World title twice. But the company is effectively booking and using him as a means to make their local homegrown talent bigger. He was the one that Alec Price defeated to win the world title, so now that's big. Now we're seeing him be like, okay, little passing of a torch to Alec. Now we're also making sure to share some limelight with these young upstart characters that aren't as well established, as you pointed out. Because even for me, this is my first time seeing Nolo Catano live. This is my first time seeing Blanco Loco live. I've never seen these characters before. So, like, the fact that we're using a big established name to help put over the younger... less established talent. That is smart booking. I appreciate it. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah, agreed.
Next up, we got some women's action. We had Becca, which you've seen her. That's one of a few performers that you've gone to see before.
Yeah, more than once.
Yeah, because we got to see her wrestle in Atlantic Pro Wrestling. I got to announce her for Impulse Pro Wrestling. Put myself over just a little bit by... and quite literally by proxy, but yes, so we got to see Becca, and this was not only my first time seeing her opponent, but it was the first time for a lot of the people in Maine, because this woman is from Texas, the Renaissance woman, Hyon. I love how I knew it was going to be her when her music started, because I forget, it's a popular song, but I forget the name of it, because it's an older one, but it literally starts like, that's what it is. I can't stop. That's what it is. Okay. But it literally starts with it's not her name, but it sounds like her name over and over and over again. So I'm like, oh, it's going to be Hyon, isn't it? And then she comes out.
Yes.
You told me you had some thoughts about this match.
Yeah. Totally.
You told me you liked this match, and you also told me you liked Hyon, even though she was the heel of this match.
I mean, why can't you like heels?
A
lot of people like heels.
I was going to say, don't get me wrong, I love The Miz. He's my favorite.
You said that as if it's like, oh, so taboo. Oh, she's a heel, you like heels? Oh, why I oughta.
How dare you. You got to keep it kayfabe, brother. Anyway.
Yeah, I liked the match. It was a good match. Like, it was nice to see Hyon's character get to introduce herself to Limitless. It was nice to see both of their personalities collide with each other. But it definitely wasn't, like, the most, like, high-energy match out of all of them. Which is fine, because you're not going to get that with every match that you see.
It made him stand out a bit, because, as you said, Alec and Ace were hard-hitting, blood-feud. We have a high-flying action in the Fatal 4-Way.
Right.
This was very much a back-to-basics match. Like,
yeah,
it was
more technical.
We got to see Matt wrestling. Hyon, as the heel, was very much a cheater. Literally pulling all this like shit. We're like, oh, let's go for a handshake. Cheap shot. I'm going to stand on Becca's pigtails and pull her up on her arms.
Yeah, I saw a lot of spots that I haven't seen before, so that was cool.
I remember when the referee's counting her for pulling on Becca's hair, and he's like, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then she lets go of the hands, and the ref stops counting, and I just shout, I'm like, she's still standing on the hair!
yes, you did.
But I do appreciate this, because Hyun, something I wish happened a bit more, and this was a theme throughout the show, the referees aren't necessarily respected in Limitless.
Yeah.
Like, and in this match, it was very evident, like, she respected the 5 count, because she didn't want to get disqualified. But Hyun would at one point, she fishhooked Becca, and literally turned her around to show the referee that she was fishhooking her. And the referee's just like, you can't do that. You gotta stop. 1, 2, 3. Like, I don't know if that's part of the character, like, maybe she's just so cocky she doesn't care if the ref sees it, but it wasn't just her, there were multiple spots where the referees were just blatantly disrespected.
Pretty much every match.
Yeah, their authority, like, and that's a common occurrence with not just Limitless, but other wrestling promotions out there, so I can't say, oh, this is a Limitless problem. This is a wrestling problem in general, and a lot of traditionalists would agree with me. You gotta respect the referee's authority, because you gotta be tricky with your cheating, like, otherwise... Literally what happened with me. I was getting hot at the ref because the ref wasn't doing anything about the blatant cheating. I wasn't getting hot at the heel because they were cheating and just being smart about it. I was like, hey, ref, they're literally showing you that they're cheating. Are you going to do anything about it?
Literally before the show even started, when they introduced the ref, people were already booing him.
Oh, God, yeah. they announced two refs, and the crowd was like, yay. And then they were like, oh, and here's, like, Nick. And then the crowd's like, boo. And the announcer was just like, it's a new year, guys. It's a new year. Like, so I don't know what happened last year, but... And then he's like, and then Maine's favorite referee, Eric Greenleaf. And it was like half the crowd cheered, half of them booed. And the announcer's like, I tried, Eric. I tried. But yeah, so in this match, Becca did end up getting the victory. It's interesting to see her kind of evolve past her leader of the Scrunchy Squad gimmick. We didn't see anything with the Scrunchy gimmick at all.
No.
They announced her as, like, a pop star.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, I know she does have some single... I think she has one single, maybe two, on Spotify. So, I guess maybe we're kind of evolving the character, which is always good. You don't want to get stale. Becca's doing a lot of things. I was surprised to see that she's still working as a face with Limitless. Maybe it's just because of how popular she is, but she is a heel when she works in Beyond Wrestling. Honestly, I think Beyond is the only company she's a heel right now, because she was a face for Impulse, and I believe she was a face for Atlantic Pro Wrestling as well. But still, just seeing this character evolve and change over time, that's something that I was interested by. Becca was also on your ticket stub.
Mm-hmm.
So your ticket stub won, mine didn't, but... So, the fourth match, and you said this was your favorite match of the night.
Mm-hmm.
The Ripper, Rip Bison versus Slade. Go on, tell me why this was your favorite match.
Bumps!
Jesus. All right, you blew out the eardrums of a few people, but...
Wake the fuck up!
You know, when you... I love how when you're a soft speaker, you lean back so they can barely hear you. Then when you want to yell, you lean right into the mic.
Exactly.
Like, so it's just...
Enjoy it.
It just catches them off guard. But this match caught... Like, I don't want to say this match caught me off guard, because I know these two are hosses. But, like, oh my god, the hoss fight that this match was.
Yeah, there was a lot of bumps taken, and they were pretty intense bumps.
Literally, the beginning of the match was hilarious.
Oh, yeah. So I think it was Rip who went up to the ref first.
Yes, and it was Greenleaf, so it was the ref that's most known with Limitless.
And he told him, he literally lifted him up like a child and put him up on the top rope, and he was just like, stay there, we don't need you for this. And then the crowd, like, popped for that, and then eventually, like, once Rip was, like, not facing him, he, like, got off of the top rope, and then eventually, like, Slade walked over to him, and he was like, get the fuck back up there!
I love it.
So fucking funny.
I love how Eric sold it, too, because he was only looking at Rip, because Rip, like, turned around, saw him, and just slowly started walking towards him, and then next thing you know, Slade's right in his face, like, get the fuck back up there!
And the way he, like, jumped back up on the top rope, like, he literally looked like a scared child.
Oh, yeah, dude. That ref sold the shit out of that. Oh, yeah, he was
he
didn't
great.
Do anything for, like, the first, like, 5 minutes of the match. He was just like, I'm not leaving. I when they got to the outside of a ring, he was like, I'm not even counting. I'm not doing shit. Like,
yeah, once they got outside of that ring...
It was on the opposite side of a ring from us, but we could still see most of it, and we could hear it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
They were taking back-to-back bumps on the fucking wood floor.
Like, when we say back-to-back, it's like Slade would body slam Rip onto the hardwood floor. Rip would immediately get up, body slam Slade on the hardwood floor. Slade would immediately get up, and they just repeated that for, like, 3 or 4 times each.
Yeah, and then after that, they, like, eventually they both sat on the edge of the ring, and they were just chopping each other back and forth. I was like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, dude. And I want y'all to keep in mind, Rip wrestled the night prior. He wrestled on the 25th in his own promotion, Pro Wrestling Grind. So this was quite a weekend for him, and I haven't been to Pro Wrestling Grind myself yet. I know it's a company that's very much based around that hard-hitting, almost Japanese style. So, like, I can only imagine what kind of a hoss fight Rip was in the night before, and now he's coming into another hoss fight the next night.
Yeah.
Like, this was big. This was a big weekend for Rip Bison.
I also just want to mention fucking Slade's fucking gear took me out. I don't know why.
He looked like a mercenary. Everyone else has, like these tights or, like, trunks, and then Slade just walks out in, like, what you would almost imagine, like, a mercenary would walk in. He has no shirt, so it's just his nice, manly, burly chest hair.
Oh,
and then
gosh.
he's got these nice looking pants, and then these, like, just regular shit kicker boots.
Yeah, it was pretty great.
Meanwhile, Rip came in looking like a gladiator, literally throwing his gauntlet down. Like,
yeah.
Oh, my God. So we talked about some of our favorite spots from that. Rip Bison did end up winning, and I loved it because the cameras may not have caught this, but we caught it. Slade literally said, fuck this, and just walked out into the freezing cold. Like, he didn't go back to the locker room. He literally walked out of the building.
And we never saw him again that night.
We didn't. I don't know what happened to him. Like, did he get paid before the show and was just like, yeah, I don't need to stay. I ain't fucking sticking around. I got no merch to sell.
Literally just imagining this man with no shirt and just sweating his ass off walking into that freezing cold is, like, the most badass thing I've ever imagined, and also most cringy thing because I can't imagine myself doing that.
As soon as he walks out there, he's like, I regret nothing. Like, oh my God. It like, you might as well have just had some explosion happening in the background for that guy. He was such a badass.
Yeah.
I've never seen Slade perform live before, but I want to see him again.
Agreed.
I really hope they bring him back. But Rip Bison, they're definitely doing something with Rip. And we'll get into that. Because before Rip could even fully celebrate, JD Drake came out. We'll get into JD Drake because, oh my God, what a man.
Oh, yeah.
And he, like, bumps into Rip, and Ripper, like, turns around, staring him down, and then he walks away. JD Drake gets in there, and he cut. Oh my God, what a promo. Like, he was trying so hard to get heel heat, and he was. He had boos happening. But, like, he also got cheered so much just because the people respect the blue-collar badass so fucking much. And then JD Drake, like, he's kind of promo. He's like, well, you probably seen this quote on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tinder, because who knows where else our booker puts this shit. But that quote is, I've built the future of professional wrestling, and I'm pissed about it. And he's talking about how he fucking, like, hates all the current generation of wrestlers, how they're all, like, pansies and whatnot. And at one point, this, like, I don't know how old this kid was. He might have been 14, 15. And you just hear a little kid in the crowd be like, fuck you, or something along those lines. And JD Drake just immediately turns around, looks at the kid, and is just like, I don't know when you decide to hit puberty and use big boy words, but you do that again, he'll get out of this ring and make sure you don't reach 17. And the whole crowd's like, yeah! Even the kid's mom was like, yeah! Tell him! Like,
she's just like, he doesn't fucking listen to me.
My kid's a punk! Like,
yeah, that was probably the one thing that he said that I was like, alright,
All right.
That was funny.
This guy gives no shits. He will call out anyone in that crowd, and he called out multiple people.
Oh, yeah. After that, there was no stopping him.
It was open season. He's like, I'm not doing this for any of y'all. I'm doing this for me. I'm sure as hell not here for that little punk. I'm not here for his bitch mother. I'm not here for that old man. I'm not here for that fat ass. Like, he literally just picked people out of the crowd and just insulted all of them. He's like, you all suck. Like,
I was like, damn, he's going down the line. What's he going to say about everybody over here?
I'm like, oh, God, he's going to say something about me. I know it. Like,
luckily, he did not. He stopped after fat ass.
It was like, all right, moving on. I mean, while he was selling merch, he heard someone was from Jersey, and he literally shouted across the room. He's like, New Jersey is the armpit of America.
And also during this, after he, started calling people out, there was a parent who took their child into the bathroom because they started to get fussy and loud. And somebody in the crowd was just like, oh, you made the kid cry. And he was just like, well, maybe they should have better parenting.
Oh, damn.
And I was like, oh.
Whole crowd's like, oh.
So, yeah, just an example of the shit he'll say.
And so J.D. Drake had an open challenge. And he called it, the Star Maker Open Challenge, because that's something he said he was pissed about. He's pissed about being booked against people just to get them over. He's like, fuck all y'all, I'm getting over now. And of all the people that could have answered the open challenge, it was Love, Doug.
You guessed it.
I also appreciate how his theme music is so over now that the crowd will sing along to it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my, they gotta release that shit on Apple Music or something. I want to play that on the ride home. But I popped when Love, Doug came out, and then J.D. Drake still has the microphone. He's just like, out of everyone, you literally had to send the embodiment of all of these losers in the crowd tonight. But this match, I love the story that happened in this match, because they start off with Love, Doug seemingly having no chance. And then you slowly get that shine in there, where Love, Doug's actually fighting back. And it starts off with like, oh yeah, he's going to do some classic wrestling maneuvers. He's going to drop kick and whatnot. My favorite spot in this match was J.D. Drake insulted Love, Doug, had back in the corner, and he's just like, you're like all these people here, you ain't got no heart, and chops him. And then Love, Doug's grimacing through the pain, and he just looks right at J.D. He's like, it's already broken, motherfucker. And then it turned into a hoss fight between these two, which I did not expect. What was there anything about this match that stood out to you?
I mean, not really besides that part, particularly. I mean, there was obviously the part where they came out into the audience and Love, Doug sat in the chair right next to me.
That's
and, like,
right.
Grabbed onto my shoulder, and I was like, the fuck am I supposed to do here?
Yeah, big thing with wrestling shows, especially during COVID, don't touch the wrestlers unless they give you consent.
Exactly.
I'll talk about my own moment, but, later when it comes up. But, I remember after that happened, you literally looked at me and you were like, Love, Doug touched me. Your fangirl moments are not, oh my god, I got touched. Like, your fangirl moment was literally just turn around like, he touched me. And then you just moved on.
I was like, it happened.
Which, me knowing you is like, well, we got a pop out of Sicily. That's the biggest pop you're going to hear from her tonight. So congratulations, Love, Doug. You got the biggest pop from Sicily.
Oh my gosh.
Oh man. J.D. Drake would go on to win the match. Unfortunately, and then I also love how at one point he went for a moonsault and the crowd's like moonsault and he's just like, you don't deserve a moonsault. Someone was like, give him another chop, and JD's like, oh, you want another chop? Punched him in the face and goes, I'm the heel, I call the spots. So after the match, though, J.D. Drake got back in the ring, beat the shit out of Love, Doug again, went for a moonsault, but then Rip Bison came back out, saved Love, Doug, and tried challenging J.D. Drake to another fight right then and there. J.D. Drake rolled out of the ring, not on Ripper's time, on J.D. Drake's time. That's when it's going to happen. So maybe we're going to see J.D. Drake versus the Ripper at February show. They didn't confirm it, but they're building to it.
Yeah.
I'd be excited to see that. After seeing what Ripper could do with Slade, I would love to see what he could do with J.D. Drake. You can also see J.D. Drake on AEW as part of the Wingmen in a more of a comedic role, but honestly, seeing J.D. Drake get to be a badass, I love it. So after this, we would go to intermission. So I'm going to say this is a good time to put a sponsor in. But before I do that, is there any thoughts you have now about that first half of the show in general that you want to get out there?
I would say there was a lot of, like, just a lot of really awesome bumps that people took, not just in the Ripper and Slade match, but specifically that one. But there was definitely a lot of, like, really cool fucking high-flying moments and high-energy moments, and yeah.
All right, so we're going to talk about what goes down during intermission, because if you watch the Limitless on IWTV like I do, you may not be aware that there's an intermission, because I certainly didn't know there was going to be an intermission. And we'll talk about the three remaining matches on the match card after a quick word from our sponsor. And we're back. So, intermission.
Intermission.
There was like a 30-minute intermission, and it was cool. I mean, we didn't really participate in it. We were, like, so paranoid now about the seats that we were, like, we didn't even stand during intermission. We literally just sat in our seats because we were, like, we don't want to lose these now.
Yeah.
We were so paranoid.
And also, I'm, like, very introverted, especially around a whole crowd of people that I don't know. So, like, because intermission is really just for you to, like, you know, get up, get, like, go to the bathroom, get snacks, or interact with the wrestlers that come out.
Buy their merch.
Yeah, that's what they're usually out there to do, is sell their merch or to take pictures and talk with people. So there was a lot of that happening, but I did not feel comfortable getting up and talking to these wrestlers and stuff, so that's why I sat in the chair the whole time. But it was cool to see them interacting with other people and, like, yeah, seeing them outside of the ring.
Part of me wanted to just get up and say hi to the people that I worked with before, but
yeah,
after I was also like, they're here for the fans, the marks. Like, I mean, I feel like I'm still a mark, even though I'm slowly integrating into the business, but
yeah.
But like, just seeing all these people, like, get to interact with them, like, JD Drake came out and I kind of laughed. I'm like, this dude literally just got done shitting on the entire crowd not 30 seconds ago. And now he's out here like, all right, I'm taking your money.
Yep.
Well, let's high five some babies and kiss some women.
Yeah, a lot of people still came up to him.
Oh yeah, dude, they love him.
Yeah.
They got, and then we Love Doug was on the opposite side of the ring selling his merch. The ring announcer was selling merch. We saw Becca and come out towards the end. Hyun and Blanco Loco were selling merch off in the corner. AG, I got to fist bump Anthony Green on his way to his merch table.
Yep.
Yeah, so it was nice. It was a nice little interaction. They also gave away two tickets to Wrestling Open, which is like a new weekly show on independent wrestling TV. It's live every Thursday, but it's in Worcester, Mass. Which, I mean, we could have driven there, but it's a Thursday thing, so we were like, oh, no, we can't do that.
Yeah,
you gotta go back to college.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have responsibilities during the week.
So do I. But like, I don't know, man. If I had more notice, I probably could have gotten away with being like, yeah, I need that Friday off, but my schedule's already made.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that show's going to happen 2 days after this podcast comes out. I have no idea what the matches are or anything. I got no idea how that show is even set up, but it's really cool to know that, like, because I don't even know if, like, the same booker for Limitless does it, but they had tickets to give out, so maybe. I know a lot of their talent is on it. Either way, intermission was absolutely fun. Make sure to bring cash on hand so that you can act. That was the other reason. I only had like maybe $6 cash. So I was like, I'm not going to be able to buy an 8x10, let alone a t-shirt with that.
Yeah.
Or at least I presume not. I didn't really go around and gauge prices, but super fun. And then we got to go into the last three matches of the show. First up was the match promoted as Ricky Smokes, formerly Ricky Archer, teaming with Ava. Together, they are known as Art. And they got to come out, and they just have such a charisma about them. They exude that confidence. Ricky literally was doing a double bicep pose for two whole laps outside the ring. You could hear him be like, I'm taking all the time I want. This is my show, the Smoke Show. Like, meanwhile, Ava's out there just like, she's giving shit to the announcer. She's giving shit to the ref. And then their opponent, formerly of the WWE, you can also see him compete on YouTube for NWA, Dirty Dango.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I was so excited to see this happen.
It seemed like pretty much everyone in that fucking... in this event was excited about it.
Dirty Dango apparently has a gimmick now where he just breaks the fourth wall of wrestling kayfabe because, like, you could hear him on the... you could hear him just... he hears the crowd cheering him and he's like, wow, I'm really over here. Like...
yeah.
And then, like, at one point, Ava got involved very early on in the match between Smokes and Dango. And Dirty Dango's like, you know... if this is gonna be, if this is the way it's gonna be, I got a friend out back who would love to speak with you. And you hear Davey N's entrance music play, and this crowd pops so hard because this was a legitimate surprise. They did not announce that Davey N was going to be at this event. And I remember I popped hard. I was like, "Oh my god, we get to see Davey N wrestle!" Like,
yeah,
she like I think she lost the belt recently, but she was the Chaotic Wrestling Heavyweight Champion. So to see Davey N come out and get to see this tag team match, yeah, it turned into a tag match. But I got to have my own wrestler interaction because Ava was trying to hide from Davey N. So she, like, at one point, like, clung to the dude next to me's leg and, like, hid the other half of her body, like, by me. And she's just telling me and the guy, she's like, don't let them near me. I need a break. Like... camera comes near her and she's like trying to hide behind the dude's leg, just like, I'm not in this, I'm not in this match, leave me alone.
Yeah,
me and the guy, and I love how it was just like both me and the guy to my left were just like, don't move, whatever we do, don't move. Like, did you have any thoughts on this tag match? What a thought.
I'm trying to think. Whenever somebody asks me a specific question, my brain automatically is just like, I have no thoughts. So
just assume I'm going to ask you your thoughts on the match and try to have something prepared.
I mean, I might think of something, but then when you ask me, I'm going to forget what I was going to say. So,
have you stalled effectively enough yet?
I'm trying to think. It was cool to see... Davey N.
Yep.
I don't know how to pronounce
it. Not America's Sweetheart.
It was cool to see her wrestle. I mean, I could say over and over, I don't know, I haven't seen most of these wrestlers wrestle, so it was my first time seeing a majority of them wrestle. Yeah, I mean, it was cool to see the women and the men wrestle each other, because that's not something that's super, super common, so...
yeah, you mostly see it on the independent scene. You won't see it in AEW, you won't see it in WWE.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
It was awesome, this match all together. Like, Dirty Dango and Davey N, they got personalities too, but I just loved how over-the-top Art was. Like, Ava and Ricky, they just were so over-the-top heels, like...
It was really obnoxious, to be honest.
They made you care about the match before the match even started. You're like, okay, I want to see these guys get their asses kicked. Other than that, it was a great match. Dango and Davey N versus Ava and Ricky. What the big story was what came after the match when Dango and Davey N won. But then when Davey N left and Dango was soaking in the cheers by himself, someone ran into the ring and beat him down. I do not mean this as an insult, but when I've been I've done a little bit of research going into this, that when this dude unmasked, I literally was like, I have no idea who this is.
Welcome to my world.
And they didn't, like, it took forever for them to say what the dude's name was too. So this whole
he was talking for like a good like 3 to 5 minutes before we knew who he was.
He was like, it was me, Dango.
I mean, he didn't even introduce himself. It was literally somebody in the audience who said something that made you realize who
he was. I heard someone behind us be like, I think that's Brad Cashew. And I was like, oh shit, that is Brad Cashew. And I don't even know him from Limitless. I know him from Chaotic Wrestling. So I was like, oh shit, he's working for Limitless now? Like, I mean, obviously they're independent contractors. They can work with whoever the hell they want. But like, I was like, okay, so, and once again, Dango did that fourth wall break because Brad Cashew's like, I hate you. I hate everyone from Maine. I hate all of you people. Maine sucks. And Dango's like, oh, We're doing a Maine storyline, okay. Well, I got a buddy from Maine who's coming to next month's show. So let's say you find a partner, and it'll be Brad Cashew and TBA versus Dirty Dango and Scotty Too Hottie. And I popped. I was like, wait, Scotty Too Hottie's at the next show? I literally just listened to his interview with Chris Jericho on the Talk is Jericho podcast. Feel free to check that out. And they were like, I was so amped. I'm like, oh my God, Scotty Too Hottie's gonna wrestle again? Scotty Too Hottie, by the way, he had like just a preview of his interview with Jericho, because in that interview, he actually reveals one of the big reasons he left was because Vince McMahon started being like a real drill sergeant for NXT. And then he was like, yeah, Vince wants all the coaches to look younger, so you gotta like shave your beard and dye your hair. Just imagine that. You're a coach, and you have to not just follow a dress code, but a hair code.
Yeah.
Like, so Scotty was like, yeah, that was kind of like writing on the wall for me, so I requested my release and got it. So now Scotty Too Hottie gets to wrestle again with Dirty Dango, of all people, against Brad Cashew, and I have no idea who Brad Cashew's going to have for a partner. But it's going to be fun. Who knows? Maybe Cashew will hire Slade.
That'd be interesting.
Right? What a pairing that would be. So the next match was... Now I'm blanking. Now you're giving me the curse.
You're welcome.
It wasn't the dog collar match, because the dog collar match was main event.
It was last, yeah. What the fuck was it?
I got my notes here. Let me pull it up. See if you can remember before I pull my notes up.
I probably won't now that we're trying to think about it.
Oh my God, before I even pulled the notes up, I remembered. It's MSP versus Bear Country.
Yeah. You're right.
I feel so bad that I forgot wow. that match happened. That was such a great match, too. Oh my God. I swear, it's because it's the morning. But MSP, the number 50 tag team in the Pro Wrestling Illustrated Tag Team 50, versus Bear Country, formerly of Maine, now of AEW. That was such a fucking match. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to ask you now. I'm going to talk after I ask you to give you time. I'm going to ask you for your thoughts on this match.
No.
MSP is one of the most... It is the most overact in Limitless Wrestling. The minute their music played, you could hear women screaming. You hear...
Oh my gosh, literally like near the entrance ramp, literally pretty much everyone stood up. And people were literally standing in the aisle where they were supposed to walk, just dancing. And I was like, y'all gonna let them through?
Yeah, are you guys gonna let them in? And...
y'all won't even get to the fucking ring.
Nope. But... Oh my gosh. Bear Country is a nice act. I remember you were a bit like surprised when they came out because of their masks. You were like, what the fuck are they wearing? Like,
yeah, like because of like when they first came out, they were far enough away that I couldn't tell that they were wearing masks. So it just looked like there was stuff on their face. And I was like, what the hell is glued to their fucking face?
Yeah, I still don't know what the masks are supposed to represent. Like, it looks like the sides are supposed to be bear traps. So I'm like, is their face supposed to be like ripped open by a bear trap or something? But...
who knows?
Either way, these guys are still really nice talents. Like, seeing them perform with MSP put them over with me more than anything I'd ever seen them do in AEW.
Really?
Yeah. Like, that's a credit to MSP. It's a credit to Bear Country to see what they can do when they don't have those TV time restrictions. These guys probably wrestle for, what, 20, 25 minutes, curtain to curtain?
I guess I wasn't keeping track of time.
They might have had 30 curtain to curtain now that I think about it, because intermission ended at what, 9:30? Nah, they didn't have 30 minutes then, because the show ended around 10:30. So yeah, they probably had 20 to 25 minutes curtain to curtain. But I was very shocked by the end with MSP losing.
Yeah, I could tell.
I mean, I get it. Bear Country's a TV talent, so it makes sense that they would go over the indie team, even though MSP is so much more than an indie team at this point. They are the vibe. They are the next level. The fact that they're not signed to an elite or premier company, I think it's more that they're loyal, that they might just prefer the indie scene. But who knows? Maybe that big payday with an elite company will come calling to them, because I certainly could not see I couldn't see a company telling them no. They're just one of the top tandems out there. They're a high-flying offense. They're a hard-hitting offense. They're different from what's out there on the mainstream. Maybe that turns off a few people, but, like, this Limitless crowd absolutely loved them. We had the captain, Aiden Agro. You got the shapeshifter, I believe is the nickname they gave him this time around, Danger Kid. They're just amazing talents. And Bear Country, I don't want to bury the lead there. They're amazing, too. One of my favorite spots was, I forget which one it was. It was like, it might have been Bronson, where he has Aiden Agro in a powerbomb position, so he can't see. But yeah, he still was able to catch Danger Kid, who was trying to crossbody him. He caught him without being able to see him.
Yeah.
Just the impressiveness of that. And then he slams both of them. Like, it was such an epic match all the way around. Do you have any thoughts yet?
Yes. my favorite spot was, just gonna put this out there, I don't know, like, any wrestling. I mean, I know some, but I don't really know, like, spot terminology. So I'm just gonna describe it the best that I can.
Go for it.
my favorite spot was when they had both team members of MSP in one of the corners, and one of them was, like, dangling from the top rope while the other one was sitting on the ground. And both members of Bear Country,
oh, right,
literally just, like, one was on top of the other one's shoulders.
Piggybacked, yeah.
And they literally just, like, I don't even know how to describe, but they basically just, like, pummeled them in the corner.
Cannonball.
Yeah.
yeah. They literally cannonballed them, but it was a double cannonball, both in the sense that it was two men performing the cannonball, and there was two men getting hit by the cannonball.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Oh, gosh. I'm trying to remember what one of my favorite spots was. One of my favorite spots was, it was almost a callback to the Hardy Boys, because, like, they had one bear in the center of the ring, and they had another bear in the corner. Aiden's on the top rope above one bear. Danger Kid's in the opposite corner. And Aiden's just like, go. And then they, like, did this perfect fluid motion where Aiden took out the dude in the center. Danger Kid, like, leaped between Aiden and the bear, like, mid-flight, and, like, managed to take out the bear in the corner.
Yeah.
Just that. I love when tag teams are able to do that, where it's like, you can tell they're actual tag team wrestlers, or not just two singles wrestlers that are to have smashed together.
Exactly.
They're able to just do that fluid motion like that. And Aiden definitely lives up to the nickname of the captain, because he was the one directing traffic throughout most of the match.
Yeah.
Like, you could hear him be like, let's go! Let's go! Go there! Take him out! Like,
yeah. It reminded me of, like, a big fight sequence in, like, a superhero movie.
Yes. And I'm sad that they lost, because I feel like MSP, they just keep getting their momentum stalled. And I feel like it might be because there is no tag team title for them to work towards. So at this point, it's like, yeah, they could beat every tag team thrown their way, but where do they have to go from there?
Right.
So at this point, them kind of losing to that quote-unquote next level of competition, it shows that there's still room for growth. It shows that it's a way to make sure their act doesn't stay stale. Honestly, maybe Randy Carver, the booker, was right in this instance, that there may have been more to gain from them losing this match than there would have been from them winning this match. Because now you're like, okay, where do they go from here? Now there's intrigue. If they had won, it would have just been like, okay, they won a match.
Right.
What else is there for them? There's no tag titles. And that's another thing that I really dislike, that there is no tag team titles, but...
Yeah, what the fuck, Limitless?
I mean, they don't, like... So, they don't have a women's title, but that's because women can also compete for the world title. So, like, the world title is gender neutral in Limitless Wrestling, so okay. They have that. The tag team titles, they have tag teams, but other than MSP, it's very few and far between. Like, they had Team C-Stars for a while, but Team C-Stars is mostly working Shimmer, I believe it is, which is an all-women's promotion. They're the tag team champions there. I think they've been the tag team champions there for, like, since 2020. So they are going on over a year and a half now with the titles there, I believe.
Damn.
But, yeah, like, they have a lot of work to do. At one point, they had, like, four tag teams in a setup, but I don't know where they can go. Like, they are saying that they're working on building their tag team division, and they're basically building it around MSP. But I just really wish there was a way to see MSP rewarded for their efforts and for all their dedication to the company. They made a storyline at one point, and they kind of used that storyline as a reason for why the tag team titles aren't here yet, but I don't know. I don't know where they go from here. Which brings us to our main event.
Yep.
The dog collar match. I kid you not.
He kids you not.
We were talking about how there were three different wrestling shows this weekend, because we set time aside for this weekend in particular to go see a wrestling show. We were like, yeah, we could go see Pro Wrestling Grind. We could go see APW, which there's familiarity there. We know Massachusetts a lot better than we know Maine.
Yeah.
We don't know Mass very well, but we know it a lot better than we know Maine. But Limitless, at this point, had only announced a dog collar match, and also that Dirty Dango would be there. Literally, Cicely was like, dog collar match? What's that? I gave her a brief description, and she's like, I want to see that.
Yeah.
Limitless literally sold Cicely, who is not a regular, she's not like a diehard, hardcore wrestling fan. She's very much the casual audience. They sold her on the dog collar match gimmick alone.
This is true.
All right, so build your thoughts. Clearly, I can't just ask you because you're not going to build your thoughts unless I say, okay, I'm going to talk, think of things to say while I'm talking.
Exactly.
I'm going to call you out on that. But anyway, this match was between the Beefer. I don't even know what his ring name is because literally everyone just knows him as Big Beef. And his whole gimmick is he's white trash poor. Like, white trash wonderful, I think is the gimmick. But at multiple points of this match, he's like, there ain't nothing wrong with being poor. And, like, the main reason for that, why he says that, is because his opponent is, like, millionaire evil Charles Mason. And I feel like that's supposed to be a play on Charles Manson, because this dude literally gives off psychopathic murderer vibes. And he literally just goes around, he's like, I hate all you people, you're all fucking filthy poor. Like, he pissed off an old man in the crowd. Oh my god. This old man that, like, is seated across from us, opposite side of the arena, he was so quiet throughout the show. Every now and then he'd like, stomp his feet to clap instead of clapping along, which is acceptable, of course. But he got so heated, like, congrats to Charles Mason for getting a rise out of this guy. He literally looks at this old man, he's like, you got 3 years left before you're in the grave, old man. And the old man's like, listen here, asshole. Like, he got up. He was immediately on Beefer's side the whole match.
Yeah, literally for the rest of the match, he just kept talking shit. He was just like, you piece of shit, you fucking asshole.
He told Beefer, he's like, tear him a new asshole. Like... And at one point, Beefer had, like, Mason in the corner, and he's punching him. And after every punch, you hear the old man go, again! 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 Like,
he fucking woke up for this match.
For real. For those that don't know the rules of a dog collar match, there are none. Other than both men are connected by a dog collar around each of their necks, and there's, like, I don't know how many feet worth of chain between them. It's a considerable amount. But, like, they can use the chain however they see fit. They can use whatever weapons they want. You only win the match by pinfall or submission. Oh, my God. They warned us before this match started. Do not have your face in your phone because anything goes here. So, you might have some weapons flying at you.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that was they hyped that up a bit too much there. Because they mostly only used the dog collar. They did use a chair. Chair only went flying once, but...
Yeah.
I mean, this was still a hard-hitting match. We got to see some color from the Beefer. Beefer was bled a little bit. I think Mason bled a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
I couldn't tell if it was his blood or if Beefer was just dripping blood onto his face. But you got to see some color. And, you know, sometimes you got to get a little red to get a little green, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
It means sometimes you got to bleed to get paid. But anyway. Oh, man, this was a... You might have seen Beefer in Major League Wrestling. I believe he made his debut there recently. Charles Mason, still a bit, I don't want to say unknown, because I've seen this guy perform multiple times on streaming services. So I know him. I love his theme music, for one. His theme music pops me. I was singing along to that shit. But him versus Beefer, it was such a hard-hitting match. You got to see a couple of different spots. You got to see Mason get literally hanged. Like, he's feet off the ground, being pulled up by the dog collar around his neck.
Yeah.
Multiple spots where you got to see someone get crotched by the chain.
Oh my god, yeah.
Any thoughts forming yet?
Yes. Probably the one spot in the show that I was, like, actually, like, at the tip of, like, at the fucking edge of my seat. That's the fucking phrase.
There you go.
I almost said tip of my chair. I was at the edge of my seat during this one spot where fucking Charles Mason literally took out a garbage bag and put it over Beef's face. I was like, what the actual fuck?
Literally, like, suffocating this man. Thankfully, it must have been a cheap-ass garbage bag.
Yeah, because he ripped it open really quickly. But I was like, what would happen if he, like, had trouble trying to rip that shit open? Like, Jesus
Like, he just
Christ.
Pulls on it and it doesn't rip. He's like, Jesus shit, you get a hefty? Like...
And also, like, I noticed right at the beginning of the match that Charles Mason's collar was a lot looser than fucking Beef's. Beef had, like, it looked like an actual dog collar, and, like, it was, like, pretty securely around his neck.
Yeah.
While as Charles Mason's was, like, hanging loosely around his neck. And later on in the match, after one of the spots, his collar literally just came off of his head.
Yeah.
And, like, he literally just tried to discreetly put it back over his head.
I know, I saw that, I was like, aw, dude, you should have waited for the ref. Because I saw the ref get down, but by the time the ref got down, I was like, where's the collar? And the collar was already back on his neck, so yeah. I was like... I know the ref didn't put it there, and I know Ripper didn't put it there.
Yeah, I saw him grab it and put it back on himself.
Yeah, which, I mean, I could, like, there's a bit of protection there with the gimmick. This dude fucking loves pain, so he mostly loves inflicting pain, I should say.
Yeah, because literally when he came on, he had one of the previous security guards wearing the dog collar, and he just, like, stomped off. He literally walked onto his back to get into the ring.
Yep. And he timed it perfectly with his music, because his music hit a crescendo right as he stepped on the dude's back, so he just had to turn around and just bask in it. And as far as, like, the dog collar, Beefer came out already wearing the dog collar.
Yeah.
Like, but, like, Mason didn't have a collar on, like, on him. He had a collar on that dude that you mentioned, but he didn't have his own collar on. So then, like, Beefer had to, like, throw the collar at Mason, and then Mason just, like, slowly put it on, and I'm just looking at it, and as you said, Beefer's looked like, it was literally, like, the chain went all the way to his neck, whereas Mason literally had, like, a black strap around his neck, so I was like, I know why, it's because Mason was the one who had the spot where he was getting hanged, so you have to have that slack in order to do that spot safely.
Yeah.
You don't actually want to murder your opponent.
Yeah.
Although, the way these two went at it, you had to wonder.
Yeah, for sure. It also seemed like the collar that Beef was wearing was supposed to be his previous dog's collar. I don't know where the truth is behind that, or if that's just a storyline thing.
I think it's a storyline.
But he was wearing his... previous dog Yoshi's collar, and throughout the match Mason kept being like talking shit about his dog, and he was just like, you're gonna join your fucking dog in hell and shit like that.
Yeah, I feel like I think it's a storyline that like Mason at some point stalked Beefer and murdered his dog.
Oh my god.
Yeah, Mason's storylines are always effed up, and they usually involve stalking. Like,
nice.
All the vignettes that they air to hype his matches usually involve that gimmick. Like, I remember he stalked Becca, he stalked Anthony Green, and now apparently he murdered Beefer's dog.
The fuck?
This character is messed up, but, like, it sells. They literally main evented a show. Think about that. But, like, we have Beefer, who's... just starting to break out in Major League Wrestling. You got Charles Mason, who's come back to Limitless Wrestling multiple times, and now these two main event in the show over the world title match, over the most overact in Maine being MSP, over the returning Dirty Dango, these two main evented.
Yeah.
They were trusted with that, and honestly, I do like it. When we left the show, I was like, I feel underwhelmed. But honestly, looking back, I think it may have just been because my energy was so fucking sapped by the end of that show.
Because of all the matches previously and how high energy some of them were, like, at that point of the show, naturally your energy is going to be at least a little bit drained.
Oh, yeah. Like, beginning of the show, I'm like, yeah, I love this. By the end of the show, I was like, oh, my God, I love this, but I can barely move. Just clap.
Yeah, literally my palms were, like, numb after all the clapping I did, and even my face hurt from all the laughing and smiling I was doing.
Right? And honestly, like, it sounds like, if you were to tell someone, like, if they were like, oh, how was the show? And you're just like, my hands and face went numb. Like, they would think that you had a terrible time. But those are all signs of great, great times, of a great mood that this show put on. Absolutely loved it. I'm currently trying to talk Cicely into going to her show next month. We were talking about finally seeing Pro Wrestling Grind, but their shows are on Fridays, and with you returning to college, that's kind of a no-go for the immediate future.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But Limitless is on a Saturday.
This is true.
And, yeah, definitely try to get those tickets as early as possible. I literally got the tickets for this the minute that they were available, and we still almost didn't get seats.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, I can't get over that. I was like, man, they really sold more front row seats than they had available.
Yeah.
Which, both a testament and a detriment, because it's like, okay, slight error in the planning stage, but they sold so many tickets.
Yeah, they did.
Like, they literally thought that general admission people stole seats. And then they were like, oh, shit, no, we really just sold that many front row seats. Like,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know how to close this. We talked about UFC. We talked about APW. We gave a little bit of Pro Wrestling Grind. Pro Wrestling Grind's also on independent wrestling television. It's a streaming app. You can get it for $9.99 a month. So if you're interested in Pro Wrestling Grind, check them out. Who knows? Maybe we'll... Well, I mean, you gotta go back to college. Maybe I'll check out their show on IWTV when I get home.
And who knows? If you want to see some of these matches, you actually can. You might actually catch us.
You might see us. You might see us. See Love Doug touch Cicely's shoulder. You might see Ava cling to the gentleman next to me's leg and hide herself between us. Like, there were so many great moments at this show. I'm looking forward to next month if we go. Next month, like we said, JD Drake versus Rip Bison. Unconfirmed, but it could happen.
Yes.
They did confirm Dirty Dango and Scotty Tuhati versus Brad Cashew and Mystery Partner. And I believe they also confirmed Alec Price versus Ace Romero with Anthony Green as special guest referee. But the referee thing, it's just to count the pinfall because anything goes.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. How you want to close it?
Big beefy man bumping me.
That's how Cicely's closing it. All right. And next month in February, I'm going to be on my own because you're going back to college.
Yes.
I'm going to miss you. But next month, we're going to be doing some gaming gabs. We're going to be doing more comic chatter. Definitely feel free to check out our previous episode where we rank every episode of Marvel's What If. Next month, I'm hoping to cover Hawkeye. I'm hoping to cover Sherlock Chapter 1, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, and who knows? I'm still trying to figure out when I actually want to do a full spoiler cast of Spider-Man No Way Home. I definitely need you to come back for that. All right, until then, though, guys, much love. We got to start packing up. We got less than an hour before we got to check out of this room. So much love to everyone, and enjoy the rest of your week.